Thank you. And between now and a quarter to two, we're joined live in studio by Dr. Colm Henry, the HSE's lead clinical officer, for the latest on the fast-evolving coronavirus situation. We'll also be hearing from Brussels, where EU health ministers are meeting to deal with a Europe-wide response. From Yall, where they've taken the decision to cancel the St. Patrick's Day parade, and how they're coping with the spread of the virus in places like Italy, the UK and the USA, plus why Nursing Homes Ireland is urging no non-essential visits. But first, as I say, I'm joined by Dr. Colm Henry, Chief Clinical Officer with the HSE. And thank you. I know you're really busy, so I really do appreciate you joining us in studio. Let's start, I suppose, On a positive note, because our health correspondent Fergal Bowers was tweeting earlier today, in Hubei province in China, the centre of this, the epicentre of this outbreak, for the first time since the start of the outbreak in a 24-hour period, they had no new cases. In a way, as everybody is panicking and getting scared, that's a hopeful sign. It shows with the right measures, people can get on top of this.
Correct. It is a hopeful sign. But at the same time, we're aware that this the virus is now appearing in multiple other countries and has gained a grip in some other countries, and there's signs of secondary transmission in other countries. And that's all the more important why our containment measures are, we rigidly adhere to those, not just as a hospital system or as a HSE, but everybody has a part to play here. These will have two effects if we stick rigidly to this advice. One is that we may prevent the disease getting a foothold in our population. And secondly, in a worst case scenario, we will delay the impact of the disease and allow us more time to prepare for an eventuality should the virus get a grip in our population and lead to considerable illness among our vulnerable populations.
What's the latest on Cork hospitals and University Hospital Limerick?
Well, Cork Hospital, as is well known from yesterday, a case was identified, which was new for us in a number of respects. And of course, it's a concern for everybody, not least people, healthcare workers and patients in Cork, that there will be a case in Cork University Hospital. The same measures apply, and it's important that your listeners and the population out there understand that, because our purpose through this containment measure is to protect the population, not just the population of Cork, but the entire population, and to stop this virus getting a grip on our population. So those measures include our expert public health team working round the clock with the hospital team, the hospital group, to identify all contacts related to this case, be they healthcare workers, be they patients, be they somebody, friends or contacts this person had before entering the hospital. And the same rules apply. Anyone who is deemed a contact of this patient will enter voluntary self-isolation for 2 weeks. And the purpose of that, while it is very disruptive, is to protect our population.
Are there other hospitals that have cases of concern other than those two hospitals at the moment and that are currently involved in contact tracing?
At this point in time, the tracing in the Cork University Hospital carried out by our public health department will take time to complete. It's complex. It involves several healthcare settings. It involves somebody who had a journey before they came into the Cork University Hospital. And we must allow that through the completion. What I can reassure everybody, particularly people in the Cork region, is that any actions that are taken as that investigation progresses in order to protect patients nobody will hesitate. And already, as is in the news, already healthcare workers who are in contact who are deemed in any way a risk are now entering voluntary self-isolation. The same principles apply. There will be no exemption.
And as you say, we have 60 plus staff self-isolating in Cork. Now, the fact of the matter is, as the weeks go on, you know, this is going to arise in other hospitals. So are you dealing with the situation where you're planning to be able to redeploy staff, as you will inevitably lose staff due to quarantining or illness?
One of the benefits, and one would like to say there's benefits in the situation of what's happened in Cork, we would prefer if it hadn't happened, but it has highlighted how good our hospitals and hospital groups are at planning for this eventuality. They are used to the situation, be it the winter seasonal surges. The same principles apply. But if you look at the actions of Cork University Hospital last night, there was no hesitation in closing to visitors, in cancelling outpatients, in curtailing elective admissions, and all those actions will be communicated to patients who are affected.
But so won't you also at some stage be likely to be able to call on or have capacity to bring in extra medical staff or healthcare staff or hospital staff as pressures come on hospitals with self-quarantining and all the rest?
I go beyond that, Anya. I can assure people that the essential services of the COH are continuing. Dialysis, chemotherapy, all those essential services will continue. And whatever is needed to redeploy staff or to employ staff, whatever measures are needed to do that, we will ensure that those essential services continue.
The other thing that's really important, because as you say, it's important to keep perspective here. You know, hospitals are treating people with cancer, are treating people with liver disease, heart conditions, serious, and that all has to continue. So what you have to do is try and keep the people who are worried about having the virus away as much as possible from those operations. In terms of the testing in the community with paramedics, how is that going, and will that be extended countrywide?
Again, if I could take the opportunity to commend all our healthcare professionals out there. Ireland is good at this. We see people just banding together, upping their game and volunteering. And the National Ambulance Service, ahead of schedule, introduced community-based testing, which is now was proved very useful for us in dealing with those school contacts in that first case. And that has taken a great deal of pressure off our hospitals, whereas before, patients had to go to hospital for testing. And that created some pressures in our hospital capacity. So that's up and running.
The British Medical Journal, it's quoting an interview with the Chief Medical Officer for England, Chris Whitty. He's predicting that nearly all COVID-19 cases would hit the NHS in a heavily concentrated burst. So he's expecting 50% of the cases they're likely to get happening over a 3-week period, and beyond that 90% over 9 weeks. Does that sound similar to the kind of scenarios you're looking at here in Ireland?
We are looking at scenarios. There is a modelling exercise, as it's called, where people look at the pattern of this illness. But bear in mind, we knew nothing about this disease only a couple of months ago. In my time as a doctor, I can't remember as much learning about a new disease in such a short time period. As that learning accrues, the pattern of how it affects populations is becoming clearer. And we are in touch, as late as last night, with colleagues in the Department of Health, with those people who are conducting the modelling exercise to see how would it affect population, who is likely to get sick, what would the admission rates be, what would the ITU dependency be. That's as yet incomplete. There are early indications, and of course, the outbreaks in Italy are closer to home for us and closer to our healthcare system, and we're learning from that. Mm-hmm. And we're applying that to our own preparations in the HSE.
Because this is going to be the critical thing. And again, to repeat, we know that 80% of people will be, you know, they'll have an illness, but they'll be basically grand. It's the people who are vulnerable, it's the people who become critically ill, and then it's down to the 5% who will need a lot of medical assistance. And for that, you need intensive care beds, you need ventilation, you need oxygen. Do you have enough of those to meet what you predict will be your peak demand?
Well, clearly our intensive care capacity was already stretched, and there's no hiding that, and we want more intensive care beds. But in the past few days, we've gained approval for an additional 22 ITU beds, which is a significant jump.
It doesn't sound like a lot. So explain why that's so significant, because a lot of people might think, do they not need more than that?
The clue is in the title, intensive care beds. It's intensive care. It's not just the equipment, it's not just the bed, it's the personnel and the funding to go around that. And they're very expensive. It's a very expensive form of healthcare. But just to switch that argument a little, it's not just about intensive care. It's not just about hospital capacity. It's not just about hospitals. You mentioned vulnerable groups in your question, and that's exactly it. We have to focus in our planning on vulnerable groups who might not have the capacity to self-isolate, and that includes homelessness, prison population, nursing home population, immunocompromised. And that's part of our planning, which is actively undergoing now, and which we're working with the Department of Health and indeed with other departments and agencies in bringing to completion.
A lot of people, and it's a bit away from the hospitals, but there's been a lot of stuff online and people wondering about travel bans, particularly as, you know, this disease is spreading, and it's spreading in Italy, it's spreading in the UK and so on.
Let me be frank. If you can access social media, or you can also access HSE.ie. We're putting up open and honest information about HSE about everything that's known about this disease. There's a lot of unhelpful information on social media. There's a lot of stigmatising, and there's a lot of information about patients that shouldn't be there. And that's not helpful. Mm. We want people who may be suspect cases, who are worried they may have this, to come forward. We don't want them to be hounded into staying in isolation and not revealing their own concerns and not bringing themselves forward to the public health authorities.
But people are worried about large public events. And again, we await, you know, this is being considered at the EU meeting. It's being considered here in Ireland. There may be announcements later today. Should people wait to get advice from a central authority, or could they go ahead and make sensible decisions themselves?
There will be advice. That advice has to be considered. It has to be based on our evolving knowledge of the disease, how it affects people, how transmissible it is, how contagious it is. And the NPHET, which is the National Public Health Emergency Team, is the central agency through the Department of Health, which is mediating this advice. They get the best expertise, not just internationally, but from our own homegrown experts. And the advice on mass gatherings will be issued this afternoon. But it's a dynamic situation, Anya. The advice we give today, depending on the patterns of the following week, is subject to change. I'd ask people for forbearance and understanding of that.
Because, you know, it's not just Patrick's Day. It's not just Cheltenham. It's even things like weddings and funerals. So there is a lot of, you'd accept there are a lot of questions in that whole area.
There are concerns. And people are right to be worried. And I'm worried. Yeah. We're all worried about this. But how to channel that worry is really important, and everybody's got a part to play here. And the most important thing people can do are those personal measures, washing their hands, avoiding coughing or sneezing and open but into their sleeve or into a tissue and disposing of the tissue, and then they're washing their hands. If somebody coughs or sneezes in your presence, to stand back 2 metres. These are simple measures that everybody can do to play their part in preventing transmission of this illness.
And I've seen remarkable data in terms of other viruses, vomiting viruses and so on, but the amount of difference in cutting infection, you can halve the rate of infection, I think, can't you, in some cases?
Absolutely.
These simple measures.
And they're simple measures that can apply to everybody, and everybody's got a part to play.
And forgive me, but this is a question we were asking on the desk this morning. Is it okay for parents to hug their little ones, or should we stop? Should we avoid that kind of close contact? Because a lot of the spread, hasn't it, in clusters have been within families and people you have close contact with.
One could argue that at times like this, people need to hug their children
even
closer.
More, yeah.
So I certainly wouldn't give that advice. I've told you that the correct advice is, and I repeat it, we can't repeat it enough. These are basic measures. Hand washing. Don't touch your eyes, your nose or your mouth, because if you do happen to pick up that droplet, that's where it enters your body. Okay.
So maybe if you come home and you want to give your kids a hug, wash your hands and face first.
Absolutely. And teach your children how to wash your hands and your face. And there's one of the better examples of social media, there's lovely examples of children showing adults how to wash their hands properly, and they're often better and more compliant than adults are, I'm afraid.
Yes, and that's nice advice, actually, to go on hugging. Thank you very much indeed for that. And good luck to you and all your team in the weeks ahead. We do appreciate you joining us, and good luck in your work and what you're trying to do. Thank you very much indeed. Dr. Colm Henry there, Chief Clinical Officer with the HSE.